Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is November 21st, 2016. This is Waypoint Radio, coming to you large and in charge, coming to you live. Still not live. We're still not live.
That
this
joke
is the second time today
Austin,
I said live.
Austin, can I point out that joke is not going to make any sense? Because
you got to listen to this in reverse order.
That joke was made in a podcast that's going to air on Friday.
4 days later.
Spoilers, we pre-recorded Friday's podcast because of the holiday. It's a special email podcast, so definitely listen to that on Friday, during which I say, coming to you live from New York, and it was not live at all.
Not
it's still
not. Slightly.
We could be doing this one live, but we're not going to for reasons that are going to become clear shortly.
really shortly. Yeah.
Very shortly. I'm Austin Walker. You find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. I don't know why I'm doing this.
Wait,
these
what
up
are you
top,
doing? With everything is falling apart.
It's a Patrick, it's been a long day.
It has been.
We're recording
the longest
4:10.
Monday.
We're recording at 4:10 PM. We normally record at 11 AM.
Yeah.
So we are 5 hours back.
We're just beginning our day right now.
Oh boy. Joining me, Patrick Klepek, Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
The crew is all here.
We're all here. We're large and we're in charge.
Are we though?
I mean, that's what you said.
You know what?
At the very beginning. So
I haven't felt large and in charge today.
I know, right?
Breathe it in. All right.
Here we are.
Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with our homework? Do you want to start with?
Yeah, let's start with homework because that's where we left off. I think
we did. I said, you know what? If this was a meme, this would go like this. Me. Make sure you do your homework and play Dishonored 2. Also me. Didn't play any Dishonored 2.
Oh, no.
I didn't have time this weekend. But I'm like in the middle of the first act of that game. So I think I can still contribute to this conversation.
But you didn't get to the Clockwork Mansion, no?
Okay. How is it?
Well, not that I would talk about it anyway, because the let's call it a trick to the way the level operates, and so I wouldn't want to spoil what that trick is. That's
okay.
Part of the reveal is very fun, but one of the things that is noticeable about Dishonored 2 is the intricacy of the level design. They're much bigger. They feel, but they're not. Okay, that's the wrong word. There's a lot more depth to the areas in Dishonored 2. They're not necessarily bigger. Like, in fact, they're probably similar sizes to the original Dishonored, but I just feel like there's a lot more going on in each of the areas. Like, one of the ways they accomplish that is just, there's a shitload of windows you can go in. You can go in all over. And they sort of include a lot of storytelling in these apartments that you can find your way into in a way that I've really enjoyed. You know, these small storytelling moments that the last game was good for, and this game is even more so. Like, for example, you know, I went into I broke into some guy's apartment, and, you know, like, he was hiding, like, a gun underneath his pillow. And then there's, like, a note explaining why he's doing that. And there's all these, like, little world-building things that Dishonored does really well and is part of the reason I love, I guess now a series at this point.
Right.
That I find the sequel is doing really... It's a world that I like being in, even if it runs at half the frame rate. It just, you know, it really wants me to earn my enjoyment.
Your rig isn't able to keep up with the latest games, Patrick.
Emily's too fast.
It's true. Yeah.
What do you think? Actually, that's a question. Are we all playing as Emily? Emily Caldwin.
Yeah, we are.
Patrick.
Yeah, it was not a question. If I was gonna play the game once, I wanted to. Part of the reason I chose to play as her was because with these types of games in particular, I have a habit of falling into doing the exact same strategy for how I approach every situation. So it's like if I was going to have a similar set of powers playing as Corvo in the sequel, I was like, hey, I know what worked last time. you know, I'm going to just do this again and make it through these different sequences. Now, granted, you know, any good level design and enemy design is going to find ways to push you to have to do different things. But I'll find that even sometimes I'll brute force my way with stuff that I'm just used to. And so I wanted to purposely play someone that had a similar set of powers. The difference between Emily and Corvo, my understanding, is not like a hugely different, but they do differentiate in different ways. So I just wanted to try and play as a character that forced me to play the game slightly differently. So like with Emily, and I'm really not familiar with Corvo's moveset. So if
there's, maybe he does have, I don't know if he has new stuff this time around.
I haven't even
looked into it.
You know, like one of the ones I've had a lot of fun with in Dishonored 2 is, where you can create a clone of yourself, that
right.
runs around, and there's an upgrade for that power, when they kill your clone, it bursts into a cloud of smoke, momentarily distracting some of the enemies. And so one of the ways that I've been using that is, for example, like, you know, getting in front of a door, setting a stun mine in front of that door, upgrading the stun mine so it operates twice, and then setting off the hallucination or whatever you're conjuring so
right.
that the guards get alerted. And then those guards come running over, and then they hit the stun mine. The other one that I really love with her is the ability to link enemies together. So
right,
they
that's Domino, right?
Yeah, so they react the same based on what happens to one of them. It's like very useful for taking out groups of enemies where,
yeah.
you know, you can just, you know, take a bottle, distract one enemy, but they've been linked mentally, and then go up and... you know, choke out or kill one of them, and probably talking about that tension between whether you should play passive or play,
yeah, yeah,
play
yeah.
non
lethally or
non-lethally
whatever, right?
Or high chaos. But I've found that to be like tremendously enjoyable, of like taking out like two or three enemies at once, like by chaining them up and setting up these sort of different sets of pieces. And I find that Emily has just a ton of options for you to manipulate the world in a way that feels at least. Substantially different than how I played the original game.
Right. Can you domino the doppelganger that you set up?
I don't think so. Oh, so like choke your own self out and
yeah.
take out. I don't think so, but I do know that I saw an animated GIF of so if you jump off of a, you know, a building from a huge height, the only way for you to not take damage is to
yeah.
either use the blink power if you're Corvo, or the far reach power if you're Emily, you can use that to kind of like nullify your fall, but you can also conjure a clone of yourself, tackle that clone to the ground, and use that to jump from really high heights and
right.
break your fall, which is a, you know, I remember seeing like something, Harvey Smith, who we had on the podcast weeks ago. I always wonder how much of that stuff is unintended consequences of the stuff they build into the world, and then they suddenly realize that players are going to use it that way, or if that's stuff that they think people are going to use, and then they're just curious to see how it plays out.
How it all comes out. Yeah, totally. Are you finding that you're playing through lethally or non-lethally?
Here's the thing. So I try to play through non-lethally, but I think we've talked about this, at least in our like private Discord chats and stuff like that. I don't know if it's just this one, or if I felt this way in the original game and I don't remember it, but it's a game that seems like it would be more enjoyable to play killing things. Like not
being
a jerk about it, but like there are just like there are situations where the people I'm faced up against, like there's no gray area.
No.
Like,
well, so there is. Did we talk last week about this? About the heart this time?
A little bit.
We did. We brought it up that there are different.
Well, we actually brought it up not last week, but right. I think Friday the week before. Like,
I'm pretty sure we talked
a little bit about the heart and how it's
and it, like,
telling
talks about the world
stories and like, you know, you can point it to people and it's like some people just want to go home to have dinner with their kids and some people are like a total asshole.
So that's the thing is apparently if you kill the total asshole, so you can hold up this heart, which is like your mother or your ex lovers, depending on which character you play as, consciousness trapped in this heart. And it will tell you things like, oh, this place used to be way beautiful, and now it sucks. That's my impression of the former empress.
It's really good. It's very close.
Or she'll say, like, oh, that guy over there is just a huge dick all the time to all his whole family. It wouldn't be so bad if he was dead, I guess. She doesn't say that part, but you should have written
for this game.
You should read it between the lines. Yeah.
Exactly. It was me or Kara Ellison. It was like, right. Go with Kara. She seems a little smarter.
Clearly.
So you can do that and be like, okay, and I have done this while playing. It's like, who's in this room? Who is shitty enough for me to not care if things go wrong? Or like, really, I guess what I do is I look at everybody in the room. And I say, like, okay, this is, like, four people who are just doing their fucking job. All they want to do is go home and see their family. All they want to do is, like, make the world a better place. I'll try my best not to, like, hurt anybody for real. But there are other times where it's just, like, this guy has a gambling den and he takes all the money to invest in evil drugs. And, like, okay, well, they're evil. They're evil drugs. They called them evil drugs.
Good.
I'm gonna have like if things. I'm gonna try to be stealthy and try not to hurt anybody. But if things go wrong, things go wrong. Like that guy does dog fighting. I'm not gonna. You know, if something happens, if he slips on my knife, like that happened.
Yeah.
So what? I kind of like that aspect.
Sorry, Michael Vick. Yeah.
I had this situation where. So one of the things I saw someone mention this on Twitter, and then I thought I would start incorporating it into my game, which is that. So when you knock people out. You know, you can't just leave them lying about, and Dishonored 2 doesn't have enough enemies that you usually have to worry too often about people stumbling upon stuff, you know, the other people you've taken out. It can happen, but it just doesn't happen often enough for you to really have to worry about it. So usually I just leave the body sitting there, and instead this one person on Twitter said, like, I try to leave the bodies in places that would really freak them out if they woke up. And I thought that was, like, a really funny idea. So now I just start taking the bodies and creating, like, elaborate scenarios with the bodies, like, you know, like, shoving four bodies into a bathroom, like, all right. In the toilet together. Or
yes.
So specifically, I had this one scenario where one of the levels involves a museum, and in the center of it are these giant, like, owls or eagles, these giant creatures that are kind of strung up, and you can use them as platforms to get around the various levels of the world. And so I had taken out one of the enemies. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go perch her up on that owl. And like, whoa, you wake up in the middle of the museum on top of this owl. That's, whoa, you've been onto some shit the night before. And so I set her down, but the game has, you know, ragdoll physics or some, you know, form of physics. And so I tried to set her down gently. Instead, she just tumbled off of the the owl and hit the ground. And from a certain height, the game won't kill an enemy, but at a certain height, the game will register
that. At owl
that.
Height. Yeah.
At owl height, she hit the ground, and I was like, oh, I'm fine. I was like, I'll go down there and check and see if, like, you know, the game will let you know if a character is dead or unconscious if you put the icon over it. And I didn't actually need to be informed of that because I saw the pool of blood forming from their head that told me they probably didn't survive that fall. But one thing that I found frustrating was I had made it through... I was very particular about how I, you know, approached the game and was trying not to kill anyone. And yet in two different levels, I've made it to the end, and it says I've killed two people.
Right.
Which makes me think it's a scenario where, like, let's say... So in this game, you have to fight a lot of what they call blood flies, which are just, like, gross, giant
super
mosquitoes.
Super mosquitoes. They're gross as
gross
hell.
Gross mosquitoes. You know, like, you can equip certain bone charms that, like, increase your mana and HP with if you're attacking them. But mostly you're just kind of slashing your way through a lot of them. And so I'm fairly sure, like, there's been, like, a couple of people that I've just accidentally killed because I'm slashing around getting through things and I just didn't realize it. So it's a little frustrating, but I don't. You know, like, I'm not worried about achievements and things like that. It's more just kind of a bummer. I wish there was some way the game indicated that in a way that, like, I shouldn't have to go to a stat screen. But I don't know. The game's combat is really good, and I like the fact that it has these sort of conversations like that you were talking about that tries to give you a beyond just a binary moral choice to think about whether you're killing or not killing. But I find it's at a tension with the fact that the game is just more fun when you're engaging with the combat.
The combat, totally. Like, I think that the swordplay is really fun. I think that the gunplay is actually surprisingly, like, there's a punch to the pistols feel almost like shotguns sometimes because of the punch that they have. And I'm doing my best to try to consider Emily Caldwin, like, a moral realist in some ways of just, like, listen, my empire is, there's a coup. I can't not fight back. And sometimes that means people, I'm not going to go out of my way to just kill a bunch of people, but my job is to do this. And in the process of trying to do this, people are going to get hurt. I will probably continue trying to succeed at the each mission objective with the non-lethal option. There was a really cool one in the hospital I was just in.
Oh, some of those get pretty there's one in particular.
Like worse than killing?
You could argue yes.
Okay, because see, the first game definitely has those things. I'm just I'm going to erase their identity and send them off to a labor camp.
Yeah.
Isn't that the one you do with the twins?
Brothers. Yeah, the twins, the brothers.
In the brothel?
Yes, totally.
So there is one, and it's the section you're about to come up to in the Clockwork Mansion, which other than being one of the most interesting levels I've probably ever played in a video game, and you'll understand why when you get to it, there's a lot going on there. Maybe in a week or two, we can go back and look at that level without feeling we're spoiling it for people. We'll do but the choice you're given at the end seems like the obvious one. And for people who haven't played Dishonored, basically what we're talking about is that for each mission has sort of a target at the end, and you have two ways of dealing with that target. One involves just killing them outright, and then another is usually some other way of either neutralizing them or in some ways recruiting them. Like, there is just another path.
Right.
But the game did really well in the first one and doesn't do so much until this particular mission. The consequences, the conclusion of the non-lethal path, like, felt like I was probably better off. This guy was
just
evil.
This person.
I probably should have killed him because what I did to him and the consequences of that, like, felt worse than just slitting his throat.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, I'm excited to get there and see what that is.
Get have psyched to feel yet? Weird morally.
Finally. Video games make me feel weird.
Every day.
How far in are you, Danielle?
I'm pretty close to the start still. I'm only a couple hours in. Cool. But I guess the main thing for me is just that I'm just really excited to be back in that world.
Yeah.
Because I've really enjoyed the first game, even though I didn't quite finish it. Played a little bit of it on stream and was like, oh god, this was awesome. It just feels like kind of the best immersive sim we kind of have right now. It feels like Deus Ex maybe is going a little bit more of an action-y route, and this feels more like a pure, like a real immersive sim. Like all the stories you're telling me, Patrick, about like trying to put this guard on the owl and seeing what happens with that, and sort of having all these weird things that you can do, and sort of the way that the systems respect player choice in that way and really kind of allow you to do all these rich and weird and bizarre things and, you know, reacts to that makes me feel like, this is kind of the best series for that.
Yeah,
right now.
I really need to put more time into it. I actually had a different one of those like emergent gameplay moments in Watch Dogs 2 the other night. So to set this up, two things. One, a thing I'm happy about in Watch Dogs 2 is that you can dance now.
Good.
There's an emote button. You hold down the down button on the D-pad.
That wasn't all the reviews for the original Watch Dogs. It was like, oh man, this game is kind of weirdly racist, and then also I can't dance.
Well, for real, like, I mean...
yes.
It was weirdly racist, and also it was, and this was like, for real...
Joyless.
A part, not just joyless, but also like, you're in this big world that's filled with all of these automatons who have details about their lives and who play the trumpet and who dance and who sing, and you literally cannot interact with them in any way except for by robbing them or hitting them or shooting them. And so I really like that Marcus has the ability to like go around and flirt with people or cheer people on or dance. He's like a couple of different things that he can do, or like calm people down. There's been a couple of times where like you can, like two people are arguing and I've gone over and been like, hey, chill, 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 chill. And then they just like storm off apart from each other, which is really cool because the characters react to whatever you're doing. So in this case, there was a guy who was playing either the ukulele or what's the thing? You squeeze it? You squeeze it. Accordion. He was playing an accordion.
Oh, squeeze! Oh, I was that. Thinking like a... like a little horn, like a little. Like,
he was playing the accordion, and I'm like, oh man, dope accordion. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna hit the dance button. I started dancing, and the guy's like, hey, cool, good. And some other people came over and took took like, photos of us. And then this like business dude came over and was like, this city, I'm a tech bro, I hate fun. Yeah, gentrification is
sounds
good, actually.
Like San Francisco, actually.
That's what he
very
said.
Close.
And he like stormed off, And at that moment, I was like, man, I'm going to do a thing I've never done before in this game. I upgraded these abilities. That's not true. I've done them one. I used this once before, which was there's an ability that you have, which is like call the cops on somebody. You basically forge evidence that they are criminals and the police will show up to arrest them. Right. And I think that ability is super shitty because like a lot of the stuff in Watch Dogs 2, you are like standing up against it, but then also get it as an ability. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, man, it's terrible that the government is spending money to build robot cops and have like untraceable like weapons. Also, check out my cool 3D printed handgun. Oh, it's really shitty how the cops are able to designate certain areas as like open season zones, basically, where you can just kill people and it won't go noticed. That's the worst. Algorithms are bad. Also, let me call the cops on this guy and say he's a terrorist, even though he isn't. And so I'm like, whoa, I'm never doing that. That doesn't seem like a thing Marcus would do. That's literally the shit he's mad about. Except this tech bro didn't like that I was dancing and having fun because he's a shitty guy. So I hit the button. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna, you're on the list now. And then the police like siren you hear from down the road. And he's like walking by and I'm dancing. I'm like, ha ha, he's going to get his. And then I hear like just thump. And then like, okay, what the fuck just happened? I turn and look, and I expect him to be, like, knocked out or dead or something, but he just, like, turns the corner. The tech bro, like, walks away. I'm like, what happened? And then I, like, run out. I start running after him, and I catch out of the corner of my eye the fact that there's a body in the street, and then the police car, like, drives away. And so I turn to the left, and I look over at the body, and it's just, like, you know, a 20-something-year-old girl who, when I, like, do the connection thing, like the CTOS thing, is just like, oh, she loves whatever, like, she's in a commune or whatever. Like, just a fact about her life. She makes, you know, $42,000 a year, which is not enough to live in San Francisco comfortably.
A little bit, yeah.
And she's dead. And then I hear another siren, and the ambulance pulls up, and a guy comes over who's, like, a paramedic, and he's like, yeah, well, we could take her to the hospital, but it was definitely too late for her. And it's like, well, fuck, like, I got petty about this dude and I wanted to give him his just dessert. And in the process, the cops ran over this innocent woman because they were rushing to go capture this terrorist. Also, they didn't even go after that dude. They hit that woman and they're like, all right, peace. We got to go. They didn't stick around. And it was just this moment of like, well, fuck. Like, huh, that's not the outcome I expected. I expected to feel a little bit guilty when they arrested this innocent guy because he was being a dick. But I didn't expect collateral damage. And I don't know, like, if she ran in front of the car. I don't know if it just timed itself well. But I really love when games produce those sorts of little storytelling moments where it's like, well, cool. This is one of the reasons why you don't fuck with technology like this. Other than that, Watch Dogs 2 remains pretty good. I think it had a couple of missions in a row that I wasn't thrilled with. But then it had a really good one. So I'm back on board and closing in on the end of that. Hopefully I'll have that done by next week and we'll maybe talk about how it stands up.
I want to point out one of the more so I was playing in Dishonored 2. They have this these bone charms are things that you equip so that you can you get certain traits, like, oh, if you jump twice, you gain mana or something like that. So you're collecting these all throughout the world. And one of the new wrinkles in Dishonored 2 is that you can sacrifice them, basically break them, and then forge new ones. So you can sacrifice one to learn the attribute and then take that attribute and apply it to a new bone charm. And you can upgrade a skill tree so that you can apply three or four traits together. And one of the ones that I did early was sacrifice the one that allows you to drink water out of a tap and regain your health. And there's another one that allows you to drink water out of a tap and regain your mana. So I made one where you... You drink water out of a tap to regain your health and mana. So they're like constantly as I'm playing the game, like I never fall below, like you can only have 10 health and mana, like potions, canisters, potions. I always have 10, like, and I play
you
the game.
You only use one whenever you see there's another one.
But I always have way too many. I will never fall to a point where I'm ever concerned. But because I'm so meticulous about it, like I will then find myself looking for rooms with a bunch of taps in them, and I'm just running around the room, just hitting, like, turning this tap, turning this tap, turning this tap, because you can stack them. So I've got, like, 6 taps of water running at the same time and watching all my meters go bloop, 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 bloop. And I'm, like, dashing around the room just, like, trying to time my taps right so I can get it all up.
Emily's thirsty. You know, she has that thirst.
Thirsty
she
girl.
Is. She is. And it's stuff like that. It's a really goofy, like, mm-hmm. it's otherwise like a pretty serious game. And yet here I am running around the room, like, chugging water, trying to get my health back up.
Yeah.
This is a true origin story for the wet bandits of
Great. Good. The thing with that game that is bugging me a little, not bugging me. I watched some people play as Corvo the other day, and Corvo sounds bad. Corvo doesn't sound good.
It's a new voice actor, right?
Was there a Corvo in the first game? Like a voice acting?
Oh, maybe not. Maybe he wasn't silent. Yeah.
Because it's just one of those things of like, man, like you're a little campier than everybody else in this game. Yeah. Like just a little bit chewing that scenery up. Where I think Emily is actually fairly good.
Yeah. No, yeah, she's fine. I mean, you know, even the story of the game is sort of, you know, neither here nor there. Like it's fine. You know, yeah. But I'm not there for that in these games.
You're there to poke around, and I guess like I want one that's like the most recent Deus Ex didn't land for me really as well as I'd hoped it would, and I love these games just like you guys do, and so I really was hoping that like I like the world a lot in Dishonored, and so I think like both of you, it's the little moments of storytelling and some light characterization stuff that's really compelling. I want more of that. I want more of that, and I want it to be applied to the main plot stuff. We've talked before about how often it seems that the coolest bits of games are in the weird nooks and side quests and stuff like that, and not the main plot. And that's something that, I don't know, that's an interesting dilemma of modern game design. So, something to think about. Other interesting dilemmas of modern game design. So, a thing that could happen, let's say, if you were someone who wanted to make a game and like really poured your heart and soul into it, is maybe you make it really good and then it gets nominated for an award, which is dope. But then the problem could be that you're using IP you don't own. And then maybe the award stops being offered to you. Not the award, but the nomination is revoked. That happened this week to the makers of two games, Pokemon Uranium and AM2R, both of which were up for Best Fan Work. Best Fan Creation at the Game Awards, Jeff Keighley's kind of award show that I guess you could fairly say that was a spinoff of the kind of VGAs and the VGX awards.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm kind of bummed by this. I get it. Do you know any other details about it, Patrick or Danielle?
No, they haven't. They haven't disclosed anything. You know, I think we can make a safe assumption that it was removed because of something with Nintendo. It's unlikely that they would have taking these games off the list just because they felt like taking them off. And Nintendo historically has been extremely proactive / conservative about how they allow people to use their franchises, their intellectual property. So the idea that Nintendo would have a problem with this, and especially for these two ones being ones that they specifically had issued cease and desist orders for, you know, it's one thing if it's a fan project that the publisher has either looked the other way on or has tacitly endorsed, which I think is the case for something like Brutal Doom, which is kind of also playing in some muddy waters. But the people who are involved in that IP have kind of let it be or are okay with it. It would be odd for Nintendo to, you know, like participate in an award show that is celebrating.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Something that they have said is legally unfounded.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, the other two games that are up in this fan creation category are Brutal Doom 64, like you said, and Enderal, the Shards of Order, which is the big Skyrim, like total conversion mod with the whole new world and stuff. We actually had stories run about Enderal, and we also had a story run, a really great story, both about Enderal and about AM2R, which is the other game that was pulled down.
Which is another Metroid 2 remake, in case
correct.
Folks are...
Yeah, so look into those stories. They're great. But it's one of those things that I do totally get it. Of course, this is what happened. But also, it's a bummer to not be able to have those games recognized for the work that's gone into them.
Yeah, it's especially a little crappy, at least from my point of view, just because it's so clearly, you know, the category is about fan art and like you know, fan work. It's not saying, oh, this is the best game. This is saying this is the coolest sort of like fan tribute thing that, you know, it probably it would look nice for Nintendo maybe to let them
totally. You know? Like it's also one of those things of like, it's the actual thing is like for fan created content such as mods, fan films, and other player content, it's all a gray area. None of that stuff is up and down like capital L legal. It's all it could all fall apart at any moment because someone could send a cease and desist, or request politely that you pull it again. We have no idea why these like specifically were pulled from the Game Awards. It's all speculation at this point. And I get that you have to police your marks. You have to you have to police your IP. It's just like both of those projects are really fantastic, and it just sucks that they couldn't be part of this thing.
Yeah.
So that's my.
I wish to and this is kind of my feeling when any of this stuff happens, whether it's I've for the last year and a half or so filed like pretty closely like localization issues. Nintendo's at the heart of a lot of these. In which I think a lot of people's frustration is the fact that there's such a closed box. And Nintendo's not alone in this. But when, if Nintendo came out and outlined, here's why we can't be okay with this, and here's why it's a problem for us as a company, and here's why we had to take it down, but we appreciate the passion that fans show, I think people would have a much different response to what is probably something they legally have to do, but the way they go about it makes it feel shady, anti-fan, and creates sort of a antagonist relationship with a company who has some of the most beloved franchises and characters. Like, they're the company that is the most aggressive about this stuff, yet owns the franchises and characters that people are the most passionate about doing it for.
Yeah.
And if you look at the way that like Sega has kind of recast Sonic, even in just social media in the last like 2 years or so, even going so far as to have their social media team go on the comments for trailers for mods that people have made and say, this is cool, man. Keep doing your thing. Yeah. Now, granted, they may be doing that because they might realize like we don't have a lot of credibility.
We have to keep what we got.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that, I don't expect Nintendo to go on a YouTube comments and say something snarky, but even just, if their PR people put out a statement that was like, we appreciate the hard work that people have put into blah, 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 blah. But,
unfortunately,
because we have to protect. And if they gave an example, like, here's how this would work out I don't know. It's just they're like a mild bit of transparency would go a long way. And this only fits a cynical, ugly mold of how they have treated their fan projects over the years.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a way that I understand why it happened the way it did. But the fact that they're going to continue to remain silent about it is only going to make people more frustrated about their relationship with a company that, Nintendo needs, their fans, right? Like, it's not like they're sitting on the top of the world anymore. And it's,
especially when you're about to launch a new console where you're going to need ambassadors for that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll be fine. Super Mario Run's probably going to be a big hit. And that's,
do you think that's what's happening, though? Do you think that they're running that calculus in their heads, which is like, all right, what is the worst outcome for pulling these things from this Game Award thing or from setting the cease and desist for AM2R? Is it like people get mad about it for 3 days and then move on with their lives, and so who cares? Whereas the worst possible outcome for letting it stay up is some terrible legal crisis.
I have to assume the folks in America are probably doing some of that calculus, but I don't know if the folks in Japan are doing that, and that's maybe...
That's a thing I've definitely heard, but again, we can't speak with authority necessarily.
No, that was just a guess.
I can speak with some authority talking to because I follow a lot of these issues. I've talked to various folks over the years, on and off the record. And if I was to sort of sum up what I've heard about the American divisions are well aware and not happy with, the whole scale of some of these decisions. I'm speaking broadly, and I'm not speaking
about Nintendo
any company in particular, but I would say in a broad spectrum, a lot of the American divisions, look at YouTube stuff, like all these YouTube takedown notices.
Persona 5 stuff that happened this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the companies on each side of these, like, they have different approaches to this. And also it's just the relationship that different countries and cultures have to the idea of, like, appropriating intellectual property is different. And just in Japan, my understanding is the calculus is just, this is ours. You can't do what you want with it. And so that applies to YouTube. That applies to these fan projects. It is a very simple case. They're not thinking about, oh, are people going to be angry? Are they going to get over it? It is literally, you're not allowed to do this, so you're not allowed to do this. And in America, right. Or I guess maybe more in Western culture, there has been an approach that's more like, well, you know, maybe it's not technically legal, but it helps us.
If it sells more copies in the long run.
Yeah,
well,
like,
the
you
thing
know.
Is, the thing that's weird is that there is also... It isn't, I don't think, as simple as, like, East versus West here, because Japan has a huge culture of fan games.
Yeah.
We just ran a story on the Toho project, which is a specific thing, but that has a ton of doujin games. Doujin are, like, the, like, fan games. And there's another kind of fan game connection travesty happening at the Game Awards this year. I'm protesting. You should be protesting. You know, right now in the Game Awards, every category can have up to 5 nominees. For instance, best role-playing game includes Dark Souls 3, Deus Ex Mankind Divided, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt Blood and Wine, World of Warcraft Legion, and Xenoblade Chronicles X. I'm not sure why Deus Ex is there necessarily, but that's not my beef. My beef is, if you turn and look at best fighting game, there are only four games in the best fighting game category. Those four games are Killer Instinct Season 3, that's a season, that's not even a new game, King of Fighters 14, Pokken Tournament, and Street Fighter 5, which better not win because it didn't do a good year. This is a bad year for Street Fighter 5. So, my problem is, that's only four games. There's an extra slot there, and I know I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. I nominated another game that is not on this list, and that game is your best game of the year in the fighting genre, and mine, Nitro Plus Blasters, Heroines Infinite Dual Blasters with a Z, just to be clear. Nitro, I'll say it one more time, Nitro Plus, you spell out the plus, it's not a plus sign, it's stylized as a plus sign on the art, but it's actually spelled out Nitroplus space, Blasters with a Z, Blasterz, colon, Heroines Infinite Dual, which is the sequel to the doujin game, Nitro Plus, but in this one, it's an actual plus, the plus symbol, it doesn't say plus with a PLUS, Nitro Plus Royale, or Royal, depending on what territory you're in, Heroines Duel. You see, the new one, it's not Royal or Royale, it's Blasters, and also it's not a regular duel, it's an infinite duel. That game is really good and should be on this list. That is the case I'm making. Go to Twitter and Facebook and use your hashtags. Use them. The hashtag, we want Nitro Plus the Game Awards. Nitro hashtag building the Blasters, building the Blasters. Hashtag infinite duel. I want to infinite duel you, Jeff Keighley, over your lack of including Nitro Plus Blasters Heroines Infinite Duel on the Game Awards. I know that this game has other fans. Jeff Gerstmann and I think that this is a quality game. I believe Jason A. Stryker does too. That has great characters in it. One of them has a sniper rifle. Her super move is you go on, you jump up off the screen, and then suddenly there's a reticle on the screen, and instead of doing punches, you have a sniper rifle, and you have to snipe somebody, and that's really fun and good. There are support characters. There are people from that's anime people in this game, Patrick. I know you're a big anime fan. Well,
are you still talking? I don't know. I blacked out like 2 minutes ago.
If you love the anime Psychopass, guess what? Psychopass is real in Nitro Plus Blasters Heroines Infinite Duels, where you can play as the character from Psychopass who has her gun that determines if you are a criminal or not. And it turns out everybody in this game is a criminal because then she shoots them.
Oh, wow.
Austin, Nitro Plus Blasters. You're a criminal for making me sit through that.
Nitro Plus Blasters Infinite Duel. Heroines Infinite Duel. It's good. It should be on this list.
It really should.
It should just be on this list.
Just make it Waypoint's Game of the Year and just move on.
Can I do that? Is that a thing?
What did we do for our Game of the Year this year? Oh, we just gave it to this anime fighting game and just moved on.
Nitro Plus Blasters, Heroines Infinite Duel.
Good. Good.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me do my stump speech.
Good.
On Nitro Plus Blasters.
Anime 2016.
Oh, beautiful. Things would be...
2018.
2018, midterms, anime midterms.
Oh, the anime midterms. They're going to be, I hope the turnout is good. That's all I can
Me
say.
Me too. You got to get out there and vote for your anime, kids. All right, I got that off my chest. That's good. Right. I've been saying it's been a long day, and that's part of it. I've had that just
it's all
right here.
Now. Yeah.
Right here. There's a super move where a band comes on, they play music. Okay.
Awesome.
What's up?
Good.
You got to stop.
Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go into the question bucket.
Okay.
Let's get that bucket. We spent a lot of time in the question bucket today.
I know. We're going to go in today again anyway. We're
digging deep in the bucket.
Deep in the bucket. Give me a number. Give me a number.
Danielle, you give a number.
You know what? It's the 21st. 21.
Yeah, it's the 21st. 21 today. Yeah. Oh, okay. This is from Anthony in Connecticut.
Good.
Hey, I've been a fan of yours for some time now and thoroughly enjoy reading the articles you all write and listening to the recordings you put out. To commemorate the start of the new audio journey in the world of podcasting, I thought a good question would be, how did you get into the world of podcasting? Nope, that's not what it says. I'm still in anime mode. I have to bring it back down. How did you get into the world of games journalism? What are your histories in the field, and how did you come to be where you are now? I figure this would be a good place to start to establish a baseline for people who are new to you. I think the last segment is a good place to start. I think everyone knows who I am now. Show now my whole know. Ass out on the internet.
Now they know.
So where did you, what is the arc for both of you on your way here?
I went to college for philosophy and psychology and fine art. I went to graduate school for film. I got my master's degree in visual media art. I immediately started working at the American Civil Liberties Union. And then freelance writing and also teaching. I had a few jobs. And one day, the call came up. I wrote a ton of freelance stuff for a million different publications. And Polygon was looking for a dedicated reviewer. So I was there. And then I did a lot of video there, and I did a whole bunch of stuff, and then the rest is history.
That's a pretty good arc. How about you, Patrick?
Oh, geez. Okay. So when I was younger, much younger, when I was in, I went to E3 for the first time when I was, I can't remember if it's 13 or 14.
A baby.
E3 98, and it was Atlanta. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs. Happened to read a website called Gaming Age, which, if you're familiar with the message board, NeoGAF, the GA part of that is Gaming Age. The F part is the Gaming Age forums. At some point, they split off for reasons that are very interesting, but not worth getting into.
Has someone written that history? They must have.
I don't know if that's formally written somewhere. I feel someone did a big feature on NeoGAF at some point. That might have been a one-up at some juncture, but Lord knows if that has been archived in any way. They had an IRC channel, and I happened to just find my way into that IRC channel, hung out there. That IRC channel was connected to another IRC channel called VidGames on FNet, if people are familiar with.
Oh, yeah, of course, FNet.
Was it FNet or EFNet?
It's EFNet, but I always said FNet.
That's okay.
Phonetic, yeah.
It's like that's the NES thing, kind of just
right,
depend on.
Exactly.
And a lot of people that hung out in that IRC channel were editors for EGM. And they just happened to, before everything moved to San Francisco, EGM was actually produced out in a place called Lombard, Illinois. So I got to know a lot of the folks who wrote for EGM. I got to know them through this IRC channel, and then was able to go and hang out at their offices. And then those people went on to move out to San Francisco and become part of 1UP and Official Xbox Magazine, Official PlayStation Magazine, and Computer Gaming World, which I guess later became Games for Windows Live Magazine. So anyway, I had this sort of foundational, total happenstance set of contacts in the industry. And so in high school, this was kind of happening in parallel, where a high school teacher has said, hey, have you ever thought about what you want to do when you go to college? And I was like, no, definitely am not giving it any thought at all. And they said, well, you seem like a pretty good writer. You know, it's possible you could maybe turn that into something if you're – I was like, well, I'm not a very good creative writer. And they said, well, you know, at this time, newspapers, journalism was a very viable path. There were tons of jobs in it. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so I went into journalism in high school, became the ESC of my high school newspaper. And then, for lack of any better ideas whatsoever, did journalism in college, which is a completely useless degree. I do not recommend doing it. It wasn't completely useless, but almost anything else would have actually been more complimentary to what I ended up doing than actually doing journalism in college. But it was easy. I got to drink as much as I wanted on the weekends and not worry about it. So in college, I would split my time between drinking and my degree, and then I would also be freelance. I was really, like, my degree was just an excuse to get through 4 years while I was mostly freelancing on the side and starting to get paid for it. So I was starting to do reported features and reviews for a bunch of different magazines and 1UP as they were up and coming. And that, yeah, I got lucky when I was graduating. Luke Smith, who is now the design director on Destiny, which is always a weird thing to say. He was formerly the news editor at 1UP. He left. I was working under him for a number of years, and then I was just the next man up. They called me out, and I came out to San Francisco and bounced around to 9 different jobs or whatever it is at this point. I was at 1UP for 6 months, and then I was poached to go work at MTV News. I was there for a year. Then the 2008 financial collapse happened, and I was laid off. And then I went from MTV News to G4, and then G4 told me if I wanted to be on TV, they already had too many dudes, so I was not going to really be on TV. They said if you were a woman, you could be on TV right now because you're really good. I was like, that's deeply cynical and sexist and weird, but okay, that's all right. So I left there. I was there for a year. I went to EGM when that got rebooted, which might technically still exist, out in LA. It was.
I forgot that you did that.
Oh, yeah. I try to forget on a daily basis. It was the worst job I ever had. And for reasons that I'm still afraid of getting legally sued for, I will never talk about why, but it was awful. I was only there for like 7 months, and then I went to Giant Bomb. I was there for almost 4 years. And then some guy named Austin Walker stole my job.
I don't know who that is.
I got fired. No, that's not true.
That's not true. That's not true.
That's definitely not true. And I was at Kotaku for almost 2 years, and now I'm here.
Now we're here. Oof. Yeah. Nice. Oof. That's an arc. I have like a very unconventional, not that like your stories are super conventional, and Danielle worked for the ACLU. But I think IRC comes up. I guess IRC actually is going to come up with my story too in a weird way. I was not
at... Were you on Downnet? Were you one of those Downnet assholes?
No, I wasn't. I don't know. I actually don't remember where our... Eventually, our thing was just on a private IRC server that someone had.
Oh, one of those people. Okay,
yeah, one of those people. So I went to college for philosophy with a minor in English. Also philosophy, yeah. And I enjoyed my philosophy degree, but I wouldn't trade it for the world, but also, yeah, it was very much a like, oh, I'm doing this because I'm interested in this, not because I think it'll lead to a job. Yeah. There's lots of me like telling people like, Stephen Colbert has most of a philosophy degree. I don't know that he ever finished, but he definitely almost has one. Oh, these other famous people, this CEO has a philosophy degree. That means it's okay that I have one now, maybe.
Yeah.
And I got out of college. I actually was supposed to go to grad school way earlier. I was supposed to go to grad school in 2007. And a combination of things made me immediately drop out. And there was two things. One was there was like this email chain going around from all of the different people. One was I couldn't afford to go to grad school straight up.
Yeah, that's the biggest.
And I could have pushed and tried to get loans and all of that. But what happened was this email chain was going around about the incoming class. And that email chain was super intimidating of just like, oh, I'm not ready to be here. And so when I applied for a bunch of scholarships and grants and stuff, none of that came through. And it was like, okay, do I want to take out a loan for this thing that I don't feel very prepared for? Like, these are people who've been around the world. These are people who have done way more intensive, like, undergrad programs than I had done. Like, I'm not going to say I was a slacker in undergrad. I missed a lot of classes and did well enough despite that, but was very much despite that, not like I was not necessarily applying myself as well as I should have been. And so I ended up just living in New York and getting a bunch of weird jobs. I was a trademark researcher for a while. I was a proctor and like set up classes for this program that led like clothing designers do their business side of clothing design. Very weird stuff.
Weird.
And on the side started writing here and there. And I ended up making this one really long post in defense of Call of Duty 4 on Kotaku. This is in 2008 or something, 2008. That was like, actually it wasn't on Kotaku. It was Kotaku had reported at the time on this guy from the Miami Herald, or maybe not the Herald, or some Miami newspaper, writing about how cynical he was about the world of video games and how his son was playing this war game, Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare. And I wrote this like essay length Austin Walker ass Austin Walker thing that was like, actually, Call of Duty 4 is really good about critiquing war and dehumanization. I talked about the contrast between the level where you're in the like gunship, and then cutting from that to the one where you're like on the ground, and how like on the gunship side it's all super dehumanized and like just like people very calmly talking about killing lots of people, and then on the ground it's just like muddy and gross and you're weak and being chased and it's miserable. And I really liked that, and so I wrote this whole big thing about that, and some people there noticed me who, you know, I was a Kotaku commenter at that point, and also at that point I was already thinking about getting into games journalism because the stuff at GameSpot had happened. Jeff had been let go from GameSpot, and that had already made me like, I should write about games. And then soon after I wrote that thing, EGM shuttered and 1UP fired a bunch of people. And I was I'm like an old school EGM. I grew up on EGM. I grew up loving 1UP. The 1UP show was like so ahead of its time. And when that shut down, I was like, oh shit, I want to write about games for a living. Like, uh-oh. There was this gnawing thing, like, oh, one day I'll have a review in EGM, and that isn't going to happen anymore, at least until this other new, different EGM showed up, which doesn't, it has some heritage to the old EGM, but it's not
it's
like...
Oh, it's got the same name.
Uh-huh. So I ended up, at that point, trying to figure out how to do it, and I ended up becoming the North American editor of this site called One Last Continue, which was this, like, there are a billion of these sorts of sites that are like, oh, it's, like, C-tier... bunch of people like barely able to put two pennies together, barely able to make rent on whatever ad income we had coming in. Mm. It's completely gone from the web now. The only other person who's still in games from that site, I think, is Sean McIlroy, who does like web support stuff over at Vox now.
Yeah, yeah,
at Polygon. Yeah, yeah. So Sean was the UK, was the Euro editor, while I was the North American editor.
That's a good dude.
I was in a chat with them that were like a bunch of Kotaku fans at the time. Again, this is like the mid-2000s. This is Crescente era Kotaku, or the late 2000s. As Steven was coming on, like, I ended up getting in because I ended up being, like, on terms with, like, Steven and N. Guy Kroll and some other New York games writers. Because at the time, the New York scene was, like, barely a thing. And I started hanging out with those guys. And then the economy fell apart. And, like, the little game site that I helped run couldn't do it anymore. And my side gigs all dried up. And I couldn't find freelance work. And Phil Kohler, who at the time was at Game Informer, was trying to get me something happening there, and that didn't really work. And I bring up his name because eventually I would go back to grad school, do all the grad school stuff I was doing, and while doing my PhD, Phil was like, oh, you should start streaming with me. And so I started doing streaming with Phil Kohler and the Stream Friends, and then from there started freelancing like more regularly and doing Game Crit stuff. And that was only like 3 or 4 years ago, and very quickly spun up to like, okay, getting back into this full time, and Giant Bomb, and then here. So, very weird path through academia, plus streaming, plus, you like, struggling to do it on your own. And I guess, like, for me, the lesson of all that is just, like, there is no one way to get into games journalism. It's a question we get asked all the time. And that answer, the question is, like, so much more complex now than it was a decade ago. I could tell you how to get into games journalism 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But now, like, it's tough. And I think you need to be increasingly multi-talented. You need to be ready to do podcasts. You need to be ready to do video stuff. Like, Danielle, the fact that you do video production is not a thing we didn't miss. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, we go, wow, yeah, she does video production.
I always throw that in people's faces when I'm, like, going for a job. I'm like, oh, I got my master's in this.
Any of us could edit a podcast. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we needed to have that talent to get us where we are now, in some ways. So that's, to me, is that sort of versatility and flexibility is sort of shitty. I would love it if I could just have someone who is all they do is write.
Yeah.
I hope to hire that sort of person in the near future, but it's so much easier to be like, oh, I need someone who can do a billion things just in case the world is on fire one day.
And the world is always on fire. Things. Like, with what it we do, out. It's sort of like things move really fast, and sometimes things don't work out with, like, the dedicated person who does this in whatever department. So it's always nice to be like, okay, just do the thing, make the thing happen.
Yep. So, you know, if you're someone who wants to get into this industry, it is so hard for me to be like, rah, rah, go do it. But at the same time, I love seeing new voices get into the industry. So if you think that you have something to say, like, find yourself an outlet, whether that is YouTube videos. There are people out there who are doing really creative stuff over the last couple of years. People like Aaron Signal and Heather Alexandra are fantastic on YouTube doing YouTube Crit. There are lots of people who are breaking in. Obviously, Gita Jackson just started over at Kotaku, and she started as a freelancer and a Twitter person. There are ways to do that work, and, like,
the advice girl, I'm remix just gonna gals. I want to throw
totally.
Them out there.
Yeah.
Too,
oh yeah. The yeah, that stuff is so good. Yeah. I love them to death. There's some fantastic people out there who just do wonderful stuff, and it's a lot about finding your niche and like finding out how you can identify a place for you to come in. Like we said earlier, we pre-recorded an episode for Friday where we answer a bunch of questions, and something like this comes up, so I'll forward you, if you have more questions about that, to Friday, where we will talk a little bit more about that. I think that's going to do it for today. I think we made it. We've been podcasting a lot today, guys.
We did it.
Guys. This whole day has been... We'll do another 4 podcasts. Oh, what's that? Did I say 4? That means that there's a third podcast? That means there's another podcast coming? Oh, yeah. Is it maybe going to be a podcast entirely devoted to the beautiful lore of Nitro Plus Blasters, Heroin, Woo! Infinite Duel? No, it isn't. It isn't. We're going to have another podcast tomorrow, actually, about a story that will run by then. I hope.
It's a very special episode.
We've been working on a big story that we just... It's taken a lot of checking and double checking and dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's. And I think we're just about ready to move forward on it. So look for that tomorrow. It's pretty dope. Anything else you want to talk about coming this week?
No, just play Pokemon. It's great.
I need to play Pokemon.
It's so good.
I haven't played
it
at all.
It's the game you need when you just want to chill. It's perfect.
That sounds good to me. Yeah. How about you, Patrick? Anything else big coming down the pipe?
I'm just trying to finish because I won't be... We'll be near my computer after Thanksgiving begins, so I'm going to try and finish Dishonored before I am separated from my computer.
Get it done. I believe in your ability to do
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good job.
For Patrick Lepic and Danielle Riendo, for Bowen, who helped us by letting us use his track Miss You off of his EP, Pale Machine. Got it. It's in my head right here. It's a good song. For everyone else who's involved and who helps us make this show every week and helps us on the website, which you can find at waypoint.vice.com. I hope you all have a good holiday. Tune in again tomorrow to listen to our podcast about the story we're running. It's pretty cool. Have a good week otherwise. You know, just hopefully you get some time off. Hopefully you can spend it with the people you love, and hopefully none of those people are terrible racists. If they are, persevere. You can do it. I believe in you.
Persevere.
Peace.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.